Great. It's nice to be here this morning. I attended the conference last year and was impressed by it, so I was excited to actually be selected to speak this year. This talk that I'm going to do today is really about enterprise applications primarily. It's primarily focused on internal applications and becoming mobile in the enterprise. And the intention is not to actually take the whole time here, but really to leave a lot of time for discussion at the end of the conversation or presentation. But I do want to give you guys a lot of details on our way there. Some of our experiences at my corporation, Sandy National Labs, as well as things that I've experienced in helping other people work and get their mobile transition actually going. So the first thing to kind of talk about is, you know, your users are mobile capable. Is your application? And what I've found, certainly at our laboratory, is that no, most of our applications, our enterprise applications, are certainly not mobile capable. And it's largely a legacy problem in most cases. It's because a lot of enterprise applications are applications that were built, you know, sometimes in the early 2000s or even in the last, you know, 4 or 5 years. Before the iPhone really kind of changed the entire market and changed the way that smartphones are viewed and mobile capability was actually viewed. So, you know, the answer is, in most cases, no, you're not mobile capable. But let's go ahead and start with the too long, didn't read version of this presentation. Some users are mobile, the rest soon will be, and this is true even in the enterprise. Whether your enterprise has embraced Blackberries or iPhones, Android devices or whatever, you certainly are going to see an uptick in what your users expect from an enterprise, as well as what you would expect not just in an enterprise setting, but just in general. And it's very important to make sure that you build the right apps that don't suck. Because just because you've built an application doesn't mean that anyone wants to use your application or that it actually fulfills any kind of need that anybody actually had. So it's important to understand that. But before we go into all the actual details of the how and the why, wanted to go ahead and go over a couple of things that you probably already knew, you know, that mobile is exploding, and kind of talk about what's actually happening in this space. It's an interesting stat that, you know, Gartner put out in 2010, that by 2013, more people will use mobile phones than PCs to get online. And this is not necessarily interesting. At the time of this writing, everyone was like, well, yeah, the mobile, you know, the developing world. That's certainly true, that in developing countries, mobile devices are more accessible and more usable than PCs, but that's absolutely true here as well. There are more people using smartphones in the United States quickly will have outpaced other devices. So it's really important to note, as I said, that this is just an absolute exploding space. This is a great thing from Google, that 400% increase in web searches since 2010, which is really a phenomenal amount when it shows that people are actually doing research on their phones. They're not just doing a quick lookup on an app anymore. They're actually searching and using their phones for more than just app utilization. And this is amazing stat. This is a Nielsen stat. And this Nielsen stat actually came out right at the end of May. They released a whole report on numbers. And I'm going to quote a couple of things out of Nielsen as we move through these next couple of slides. But literally, smartphones represent more than 2/3 of all U.S. mobile phone sales, and that number continues to increase. So the old type of regular phone sale just isn't happening. So everyone who's buying a phone anymore is buying a smartphone. They have varying powers. They may not all be iPhones, they may not all be Android devices, but they're certainly, that is the phone when people go to the Verizon store, that is the phone that they're purchasing, Verizon, AT&T, whoever your choice may be. And literally, this is also from that same Nielsen quote, 40% of the U.S. population now uses smartphones, which is an amazing number when you consider the millions of people that live in the United States. And I put this one in here because I think this is kind of an interesting thing to note, is that just because you've built an application does not mean that people are actually going to use it. And I put this in here because my wife actually said this to me, and I went looking for something to find information to kind of back up her claim, that she and her friends don't use things like the Amazon app or any other number of clothing lines or any other of Nordstrom. Just name a store and name an application, and they have one. They don't use those for doing online purchasing. And the reason they don't is it's not good for researching. And it probably has a lot to do, in my mind, and I'm extrapolating a bit here, that switching between applications on a mobile device is difficult, and so it's trying to do price comparisons or price matching is hard, except in mobile browsers. So going to a mobile site and having tabs open is much easier for users. So that form factor actually even trumps the application that you built. So it's really kind of an interesting figure here that only 19% of people actually enjoy using an application for doing any kind of price comparison. And finally, the overall numbers. Now, granted, if you're building an application for an enterprise, your numbers are going to be your numbers. They're going to matter for your business and what your business is doing. But again, from this same report from Nielsen, just showing you where the current state of the market is. Android certainly owns the market. You can talk about fragmentation and other problems that the Android devices certainly introduce, the Android platform certainly introduces. iOS, and we're talking about smartphones here, so really the iPhone, is at 32%. So at 32% of overall usage is just a phenomenal number for a single company. So they really are still very much a thought leader in driving things with Apple, as if you didn't already know that. This RIM number is actually down by 4%. So they went from 15% to 11%. That number was distributed amongst Android, iOS, and even Windows Phone. Windows Mobile is still obviously dropping. Microsoft really isn't supporting that platform anymore. And Windows Phone, with Windows Phone 7 and Windows Phone 8, is actually gaining momentum. But there, this chart clearly shows there's a lot of ground to make up. Other is Symbian and other devices that exist but really aren't driving any kind of thought in the market space. And one thing that's really kind of important to note about this particular slide is that it used to be that the business sector, IT sectors, would actually drive purchases. So, you know, your corporation would be using a particular type of machine, particular type of software, and then users at home would actually buy that software or replicate what they were used to at work. That's shifting. With the shift to mobile, it's actually becoming very much a consumer-driven requirement. And what I mean by that is people purchasing iPhones and forcing iPads and forcing Android devices and mobile devices into the enterprise, which is it's just a shift. It's now a consumer-driven space versus being a IT or tech sector driven space in the business sense, in the enterprise sense. So how do we do this? How do we actually build enterprise applications that don't suck? And some of this stuff certainly applies to applications as a whole, but we're obviously going to focus in on this particular presentation on mobile. So which apps make sense for mobile devices or for a mobile transition? Ones that you can say, okay, cool, it's going to be this is the application that makes the most sense for us to get started with. And when I've talked to other organizations, I've been at a lot of conferences, and even talking to people in my own organization, I'm amazed at the number of people that want to start with the corporate directory. And the reason I find the corporate directory to be a very funny one to start with is I don't really care how you're doing mobile devices. If you have mobile enterprise devices, whether it's a BlackBerry device running a good mobile, you know, an iOS device, an Android device, more than likely they're going to be integrated with your corporate Exchange server or other mail server, and more than likely they're going to have complete access to whatever global address book you're providing. So sure, providing a corporate directory that adds stuff on top of that, maybe it has a better search capability, maybe it adds photographs, maybe it does any number of other, you know, neat little things, doesn't really make sense from a mobile device, but it's amazing. This seems to be the place where most corporations want to start, maybe because it seems like an easy application to do. A really good application that I find to be useful, and unfortunately we haven't even done in our corporation, is depending on the size of your corporation, you may have a corporate campus, and having a corporate map that you can easily get to on your mobile device is a huge win. So that's really a great application or a great idea, a productivity app that makes a lot of sense. Expense report is a real gold mine for a lot of people in that you want to get people when they're actually making transactions, and depending on reporting requirements, they may not have to carry around food receipts, for instance, if they had an ability by which to enter while they were on travel their cost. You know, so it makes life a lot easier for people to actually insert stuff in. So it's another really good place to start. Something that makes a lot of sense too, if you're looking for places, you know, not even necessarily a quick win, but certainly a win that makes sense, that's going to make people really productive or really useful, is IT support people or even facilities type people who are, you know, working around fixing things on a corporate campus. So ticketing systems, things that mean that the person doesn't have to come back to a desk to figure out where they're going next, or even worse, if they're not, you know, not having to print out entire ticketing sheets to understand what their next job is to do. So these are kind of really good ideas for getting started with, you know, where can you look in your corporation, as well as knowledge management. You know, if you're at a particular, if you're a customer's desk and you're not really quite sure what to do or how to do it, it really certainly helps if you can whip out a phone and check some things out. But that just, you know, those are kind of my ideas or my espouses. There's things you should do inside of your corporation to understand. Is look for things that have analytics that make a lot of sense. And what I mean by that is just because it's an application that doesn't necessarily stick out, that has an obvious mobile benefit, like a maps, expense tracking, or timesheets, it does make a lot of sense if all of your users seem to be using your corporate approval application, or they are always showing up, even if the corporate directory happens to be the thing that they're using. That maybe make more sense in your particular case. So looking at analytics and seeing if people are actually already tolerating your non-mobile experience on their mobile device makes a lot of sense as to where we're going to go ahead and start. So really identifying applications via things that are measurable is really what I'm saying here. So ways to drive adoption. I'm amazed at the number of times that I've seen corporations and or even people in the consumer world, hey, if we build an app, you know, they love applications, and so if we build it, they're going to go ahead and show up. And that's not the case. In a particular instance, there was another laboratory that I deal with that built a corporate approval iPad application. And they were really proud of this application, and to their credit, it was a nice-looking application, and it worked pretty well. The problem is that of 10,000 people, only 700 people at their organization had an iPad, and of the 700 people who had iPads, only a small percentage of them were people that would actually do work inside of this approval application. So what you need to make sure is that, you know, number one, it's an application that makes sense to build, and that it's an application that actually fulfills some kind of need in an enterprise. And so how you actually drive adoption is by knowing your audience, knowing who you're developing it for. And that's been the example I gave there. Obviously, people were not using iPads that would have used their application. So you need to understand who's actually going to use this, and you need to know how they're going to use it and what they're going to use it on. So if they're going to be using it on an iPad, or they're going to be using it on an Android tablet or an Android smartphone, knowing your devices really helps. And that's a real advantage that enterprise gets. And we get this advantage in an enterprise, whether you're building web applications and you know that you don't have to deal with IE at all, or you have to deal with only certain versions of IE, versus, you know, the poor people that are developing apps for a larger audience that have to, you know, account for a lot of things. So knowing your target devices is really nice from a corporate sense, from a corporate standpoint. And you're able to know that simply because you know your corporation. You should have metrics on what you're purchasing, what your people are owning. One thing to note about knowing your target devices, there's a big buzzword at the C-level right now called BYOD, or acronym BYOD, for bring your own device. And it's this dream, and it's happening some places, but it depends on who you are, that users are going to bring in their own devices, and that we should let those devices connect to our corporate networks and they can do work on it because people are comfortable with their devices. And I understand the quote-unquote philosophy behind it, but it certainly has a lot of security ramifications and other things that have to be considered. And also kind of throws off the ability for you to know your target devices, because if all of a sudden you have to worry about every flavor of Android device is going to show up versus the Nexus devices your company was previously purchasing, it can become difficult. And then finally, you need to know your use case. What are people actually going to use this application for? And we're going to go ahead and go through these in a little bit more detail here. So knowing your audience, and this, how you do this, how you actually get to know your audience, is you need to understand who your actual users are, and you need to fulfill those users' goals. So creating a laundry list of features is not useful. And what I mean by that is if we go back and use the expense report example, if you look at expense report, it's really tempting to do things like geolocation, allow people to take pictures of receipts, and other things, when really the core of that application is the ability to allow people to enter an amount and possibly associate that amount with a charging number if you have a charging system or however you choose, you know, however your corporation fulfills that sort of role. So it's fun to play with the geolocation as a developer. It's fun to play with camera stuff, but it's important to understand what's the user's goal for using this application. And how you do that is by, as I said, by getting to know your user. And what I tend to use is the methodology espoused by Alan Cooper, who talks about what's called user personas, which is the ability of identifying what who a user actually is, how they plan on actually using your application, and what their goals are for using that application. And in the expense report example, that's primarily going to be, I want to enter the amount, and I want to get the barest of minimal amount. And sure, anything else might make sense, but does it really actually fulfill the goal? And so if you want to read about what Cooper is talking about, there's a great book that he's written called The Inmates Are Running the Asylum. And even if you're not interested in user personas, if you're in software and software development of any kind, it's a great book to read. It's a pretty fast read, and I highly recommend it. Even if it doesn't necessarily change you to over to wanting to use user personas, it really gives you an idea of how to focus on a user. Another really important thing to note in mobile is that since it is different, you need to understand what makes users angry. For instance, in a lot of corporate networks, you are constantly authenticating to various enterprise websites and or applications, but that's handled by single sign-on type solutions, so you don't have to continually re-enter your password. As an example of something at our organization, when people go to a picture resource site, there is no credential caching done. So each and every single time someone requests something from that particular resource, they're actually checked to see who they are and do they have access. So if I make use of a lot of those pictures in a mobile application, a poor user is going to have to enter in their password each and every single time for every picture resource that I've used on that particular app. So it's important to know that typing their password at all is frustrating on a mobile device, especially if your corporation requires special characters and or passphrases, because when on a mobile device, I can't just press shift and add a special character. I might have to tap to go to a couple of different keyboards to find my ampersand or to find the asterisk, etc. So it's difficult to have request users to constantly enter their password. So it's something to consider when you're developing mobile devices. How many password requests is this particular site going to require? And is there any way that I can get that down to where I only have to require one or even none? And that's really more of a corporate IT infrastructure question about requiring no passwords. And if you have any questions about how that's possible, we can talk about that a little after the presentation. Another thing to note is users do not like to lose their work. So depending on your application, whether it's a native application or a browser application. Hang on, let me mute someone here. Thank you very much. So I was talking about users do not like to lose their work. So when we talk about that users don't like to lose their work, what we mean by that is, especially in earlier iPhone devices or iOS devices, it's not as bad now, but it was exceptionally bad originally. Whenever you left a particular mobile browser tab and then came back to that browser tab, a lot of times it would refresh the page. And if you had not cached the user's form input, they would lose their input, which on exceptionally long forms is certainly annoying, and even on a small form is pretty annoying. And this can also happen when you're doing application switching, when you're switching between applications on a device. If you're not careful to maintain state, they will lose user input, and that's really, really frustrating for a user to have you not care about their work in that way. So you also need to know your devices, and as we kind of talked about, we do gain an advantage in a corporate sense by understanding our devices. But something that's even more important to understand is that a smartphone is not equal to a tablet, and a tablet is not equal to a desktop. Now, I will sometimes, you'll hear when I'm not giving this particular, talk about this particular slide, I will sometimes argue that in a corporate sense, tablet devices, especially ones that are of the size of the iPad and larger, they certainly, if you design your desktop application correctly, you're going to be or your web application correctly, you're going to be pretty close. And so you can really approximate a lot of the tablet stuff. But you have to be careful because they don't have a mouse and there's things to think about. So even if you can get the screen resolution to work correctly between a desktop and a tablet, you still have to consider that a tablet is a different form factor. There's a different, it's a different input, it feels different, it behaves different. So these are just things to actually think about. And one of the really important things to note about the devices not being equal is as the devices get smaller, they tend to add features and have more things that you have accessible. So, you know, iOS devices as well as Android devices, tablet space have a lot of the same features, but it really is, as far as cameras are concerned, accelerometers are concerned, GPS devices, locators are concerned, you really have more options and have a better stable of things that you can access on mobile devices than you do on a desktop. Most desktops don't necessarily have a webcam, don't necessarily have a microphone, don't have all these different user input devices that are kind of guaranteed by the very, very nature that it is a phone or it is a tablet. So it certainly increases things. The final thing to note is that smartphones are always with users. I think that's probably true for everyone in this conference. I've got two phones sitting in front of me right now. I go to sleep with a phone next to me by my bedside, which is probably not healthy. But I think that that's true not only for people in the tech industry, but also true for most people. And especially as people start to cancel their landlines, smartphones are going to be with users all the time. So it's really important to make applications designed for smartphones super easy and super fast as far as accessing key functionality. Finally, the platform matters. So you need to know your use case. And when I talk about your use case, the idea is, you know, why do I need to know it? And it's about keeping yourself focused. And this kind of goes back to those goals. You know, why am I adding a feature? If it's not going to help the user accomplish their goal, what am I really doing? So it really, again, these two things kind of tied together really help you understand what you're building and why. It also helps you convey the value proposition to users. You're going to tell them, hey, using this application is going to make your life easier or better this way. You don't have to carry receipts with you throughout an entire airport and for 2.5 weeks while you're on travel to some, you know, to a foreign country or all over the United States. You simply can add expense reports as you go. And by the way, you can also, you know, in a different application, you can do your timesheet while you're on the go if you forget to do it. So there's a lot as far as, you know, conveying that value proposition, because you're able to speak to a user's goals. This is the goal that you have. I'm fulfilling that goal, that need, that want with this application. Your users know what makes a good app. We know what makes a good app. You know when you download something from the app store of your choice that you instantly kind of feel, oh, this is bad. You just kind of know, or you get annoyed by the way certain things work because it's not the way that everything else works on a platform. So it's important to invest in the user experience. Especially as you move closer to native applications, the more native your application is, the more important it is that your application perform and behave like an application on that device. Metro applications, for instance, on the iPhone, they work. You can do a Metro type interface on the iPhone, but it feels a little strange. It kind of feels different than the rest of the applications on a particular device. It's not a bad thing. It's just important to understand why they're deviating. We obviously understand why Microsoft's deviating in that particular sense. But if you're deviating, considering you probably don't have the scale that Microsoft has to deal with, obviously, you need to understand why you're deviating. Why am I making my user interface different for this particular device? I need to understand the real why. And if there is a real why, do it. Go for it. There's no reason not to. But it's something that you should be thinking about when you're designing your apps. And really, the easiest way to do that is to think of your favorite apps on a particular platform and really kind of understand why they're your favorite apps. Play with them a little bit. Sometimes it's going to be because of functionality, obviously, but there's certain applications that just feel cool, feel good when you're using them. They feel like, you know, they feel like water, they just work really, really well. So it's really important to understand those things and then to stick to them. So how do we do this? How do we actually develop applications? And so as far as the applications are concerned, I'm going to talk about a couple of different types of apps. And so there's really four types when you're talking about mobile application development. And I think that if you're in this talk, you probably have an idea of these, but it's good to kind of point out their the unique abilities of each, as well as to understand the differences between them. Now, a mobile website we'll talk about very briefly, simply because a mobile website, in my mind, is something that simply delivers content. A blog as a consumer is a good example. A news site as a consumer is a good example. If you don't consider things like the comment feature and things like that, I mean, you can split hairs on how you want to consider it. But really, a mobile website is about delivering content and not really having an interaction. So it's not really, in my mind, a mobile application. Then there's web applications. Applications that are fully functional, tend to be, are obviously JavaScript and CSS based, function in the browser, and exist for the purpose of, hey, I've built this application, it can be consumed by multiple devices. The hybrid app is another kind of application. And hybrid apps, a really good example of a hybrid application is Facebook. Facebook, I believe across, if not all, most mobile devices, is actually a hybrid app. And what I mean by that is they build in a kind of a frame that renders everything in a browser. So if you're using Facebook on your iPhone, what you're seeing is essentially iPhone Chrome, which is a native application. So there's, when I say that, there's Chrome around the actual web view that you're looking at. So you're scrolling through a web page when you scroll through your Facebook, but when you click the camera button or do other, you know, GPS type things, it kicks in the native portion of that application and actually starts to work. And then finally, there is a native application, which is an application built from the ground up for a particular device. It makes little to no use of web resources from the standpoint of rendering web stuff, but certainly, obviously, it can have a, you know, talking to a back end, but really is built from the ground up using native features and native UI elements on the device. So let's talk about native applications versus web, because those are typically the kind of the two choices. We'll talk about hybrid stuff here a little bit more in a second. But as far as applications are concerned, it's important to understand the differences. And a native application, especially from an enterprise standpoint, is expensive. And the reason is it is written for each platform. So if you write an Android application, you're going to be writing that Android application, and then if you want to write the same application for BlackBerry, you're writing a BlackBerry application, and on and on and on. So you're going to continually redevelop the same application over again. Even if you make use of back-end resources, there's a whole UI feature and whole UI issues that come in to, you know, as far as creating the right user experience for people. And for most enterprises, this is cost prohibitive and not functional. Web applications are written once for all devices. So if you write a web application for at all, it's going to be compatible with all devices, assuming that the device is a fully functional HTML5 JavaScript CSS device, which we can say that most modern devices, even the poor old BlackBerry, are at this point. So they're not perfect. The browsers are certainly not even on par necessarily across the board. But if you use a lot of the mobile libraries that are available, you're going to be just fine developing a mobile application using those technologies. Language varies by platform for native applications. If you're developing for BlackBerry or Android, it's Java. If you're developing for iOS, it's Objective-C. And if you're developing for Windows Phone, you can use any of the .NET type languages. Primarily C#, though, is what you're going to see. Updates happen in real time on web applications. You know, I think we all kind of understand that. And native applications must be downloaded to update, which presents a real problem for enterprises, depending on how your enterprise is situated. It can be very difficult to actually do application distribution. And we can keep going down the laundry list of features here, but the most important thing to note from the bullets here is that it's very easy to access native features from the native application. And what I mean by that is you have access to the camera, you have access to very specific geopositional information. So if you do want to get geopositional information, you can request the requirement. You can basically set up the requirement for that geopositional stuff, saying, I do not want to deal with Wi-Fi, I only want actual GPS information. Whereas for the web, if you're asking for geopositional information, you're going to get what you're going to get. Now, depending on some of the new features being built in by the W3C, you have an idea of the accuracy of that information, but you can't really request, you can kind of request more specific information, but not many browsers are offering that kind of yet. So it's just a kind of an example of a feature that, sure, it's available to both, but it's only available in a very limited sense to web applications. It's also interesting to note that you're going to be cut off from a lot of things like cameras and other stuff that can really make your application sing. So this chart, I can't claim ownership of this chart. I have to reference the slide there at the end, but I think it's a great chart for kind of representing what actually is available as far as mobile applications are concerned. When you're developing an application, what you have access to, what you're able to do, and what you can actually, what's actually going to cost you. And as you can see, you know, building a full native application has some real values. Now, the mandatory that I have listed here on this slide, that's certainly true for external applications. So if you're building an application for consumers, obviously, unless you're deploying it to the Google Play Store, you're going to have some kind of approval process, whether it's the Amazon App Store or the iTunes App Store. There is going to be a requirement of approval before your application is going to be deployed. That is not true in a lot of enterprise senses. There are ways to set up enterprise app stores that are just for your enterprise, just for people on your network, and there's not necessarily really an approval process. Maybe there's an internal approval process, but nothing as draconian as going through any of the other external approval processes. And as far as development costs for native applications, I also wanted to highlight that absolutely, native applications are the most expensive to produce. And largely that's because you have to develop multiple native applications. They're also expensive because even if you had a good stable of software engineers ready to go, there are tricks and tips and problems, just like any platform, that you have to kind of learn and understand. So even an experienced Java developer, yeah, they're not going to have any Java problems when they jump in and develop their first Android application. But they're going to have Android platform problems or things that they don't understand about the platform or assumptions they're going to make. And in fact, as Andrew, you know, I'm kind of picking on Android here, but there's a whole cottage industry of libraries that have developed about around making Android development easier. And certain paradigms that we're familiar with in software engineering, like dependency injection, etc., that simply aren't easy to do without adding completely external libraries to Android. So there's obviously a ramp-up cost, and even after that ramp-up cost, it's still an expensive platform to develop for. Now, hybrid applications, kind of the idea behind a hybrid application is to give you the best of both worlds. And for the most part, it does guarantee that, but it does have other issues. If you look at, I'm going to pick on Facebook a little bit here, the Facebook mobile application, especially for iOS devices, has gotten better recently, but oftentimes, when you click through on a notification, it won't refresh comments on a picture, for instance. So you post a picture, you get a bunch of comments, they're kind of flooding in, and yeah, you're getting a notification, hey, you've got a new comment on this particular picture, but you're not going to actually be able to see that comment unless you shut down the application, reload the application, and force it to repull from the server. Because simply, I don't know if it's a WebKit issue or a Facebook issue, but it certainly is an issue where the application, since it's not native, they've ceded some sort of control and are having to rely upon the caching, and it simply, in my mind, it largely fails in that regard. And that's something you would face with your application too, is there are certain, you're splitting hairs, and by splitting hairs you're going to get some of the a lot of the good, but also some of the bad of both worlds when you do create a hybrid application. But it does make for things, if you need to create, for instance, an application that can be used, that really needs to make use of the camera, or other features that you don't have access to from a website, you can suddenly have access to those things, and you don't have to worry about building a full UI, a brand new UI, complete from the scratch for each platform. So it really is a good option to think about. And we'll talk about some of the tools that you can use here in a second to make a hybrid application actually happen. As far as a web application is concerned, the speed is, you know, obviously they're downloading resources every single time, and depending on the caching of the phone, depending on what you've done to your site, so there is a delay. It's not as, it doesn't feel quite as instantaneous. You're also going to find a lot of times that the JavaScript capabilities of these devices are not obviously the same that we're used to on full-fledged browsers. So there's going to be a little bit of delay a lot of times when people are using web applications on a native device. They're going to feel like, wait a second, when I pulled down, the refresh didn't just kind of happen. It didn't feel like water. And then I say water because it's a a lot of people will describe applications in the UI space using terms like liquid and water, because that's what it's supposed to feel like to people. And I think largely when you talk about swiping along on these devices, it's a pretty good analog. The App Store is not available to to web applications, meaning that you're not advertised. Granted, for an enterprise application, that really doesn't matter. Your enterprise application is there or it's not. And as far as device access, again, and I've probably beaten this horse to death, but you don't have access to all features. You're not necessarily going to get access to the accelerometer. You're not going to be able to know what's happening with the phone. Sure, your orientation might flip and you can react to the orientation flipping, but you're not going to be able to know, oh, this person's walking, I'm going to build a pedometer application as a web application. It's simply not going to work. And as I said, there's a reference here at the end to this particular slide if you want to check it out. But I really do enjoy this this slide. It tells a very good story for talking to management. So it's really important to note that no single approach is right for everyone. It matters about your target audience and the app function. And so a good example of an app that that we recently built, that I helped recently build at my corporation, was we have an environmental impact team that goes out and looks, you know, what our impact is on everything from plant fauna to horny toads. So what's actually happening, you know, is where was the last horny toad found, where was the last snake migration, tarantulas, I mean literally all kinds of understanding our environmental impact. And so they're building an application for them is doesn't make sense to build a web application because they really need to be able to photograph and geotag information out in the field. So not providing them with the ability to do that, because we built a hybrid, you know, we could build a hybrid application that would certainly work, but really a native application made a lot of sense because it's for a small number of users. We know the device that they're going to be using, and so it makes it very easy to say, okay, I'm going to build this environmental impact group an application that they can use. Certainly, does it cost a little bit more money to do that, as we talked about? Absolutely. But we knew the target audience, and you know the app function. It makes it makes a lot of good sense. Also, your IT resources are something to consider. When I discussed as far as when you're building an application, something like a native app can certainly cache passwords easier than, and you can provide that password over and over again, versus a web application where someone's going to have to constantly log in because of the way the caching may or may not be done for your particular enterprise app. So understanding your IT resources can certainly influence what you're going to do, because if your IT is not there to actually build a single sign-on or help you build a single sign-on for a particular device, then you're not going to be in a situation where you can deploy an application that doesn't require constant password entering and constant requirements from users. So these things kind of all factor in when you're thinking about what is the right approach for my company. And obviously time and budget. I think that affects everything, so it would be disingenuous not to put this on here. How fast do you need to get something out, and how much money do you actually have to get there? How much runway do you actually have before you have to get the plane off the ground? So we talked about, you know, again about the goals and everything else. So really all these things kind of come together. They kind of coalesce together at the end to really say, okay, this is the type of not only the application that I want to build, not only the features I need to add to my application, but the platform and way that I actually want to build that application. And so really let's kind of talk about the trade-offs between the four types. Obviously, mobile websites that are just delivering content are simply the easiest. The user experience is, you know, I mean, it's not necessarily low. I'm not totally jazzed where I put that there, but it's just a mobile website at that point. Web applications have a user experience that's slightly lower because, again, you're not developing an application that is specific to a particular platform. So by not doing that, you're really having to approximate things for particular users. So it's important to, you know, kind of think about that when you're building a web app. Hybrid applications certainly have a better user experience, but again, they increase the cost and time to market because you're having to develop them for each platform that you're targeting. And then again, native applications have the best user experience, but do have the longest cost and time to market. So if I had to make a recommendation for most enterprises, it makes the most sense to develop web applications. and most enterprise applications. So there's a difference in my mind between an application that's being developed for an organization within an enterprise, so you're developing something for the environmental impact group, or you're developing something that everyone at the corporation is going to use, expense report, mapping, etc. If you develop a smart and nice web application for those kind of enterprise, larger focused things, it's going to get the job done, and it's going to feel good enough that the users are going to like your application. So it doesn't make a lot of sense to spend money then figuring out how to build a native application in each and every single sense. It simply is going to cost you more to build those native applications, a native expense report application, for instance, especially when if you consider, uh-oh, something's changed, some feature that we've made use of has been deprecated, and now we're having to go back and redevelop a portion of our expense report application simply because something's changed on the platform, or, uh-oh, we're no longer going to support iOS devices. So literally all of the work that we did developing that expense report iOS device is now dead. So it doesn't necessarily make sense, at least in my mind, from an enterprise sense, to really target specific applications, which kind of throws out the hybrid app, except for those instances where you really do need the capability of certain devices. You really do need an accelerometer. You really do need the camera. Then a hybrid app is probably the best solution in my mind for enterprise applications of that sense, when I really do need access. But overall, it makes the most sense to develop web applications for mobile devices for the enterprise. Now, there's ways to actually get that done, some client-side tools that make this possible. PhoneGap is the first one I want to kind of highlight. I know it's farther on down the list. PhoneGap is a very interesting project in that it allows you to write HTML and CSS and then talk to a JavaScript library that allows you to get access to native features. So what you can do is develop your hybrid applications using PhoneGap, and you actually get the capability of those hybrid apps. And it's really kind of cool because you as a user say, hey, or a developer can say, hey, I want to develop my application. I'm going to spend time developing this application, and I'm going to now be able to target Android devices, iOS devices, Windows phone devices, even BlackBerry devices using PhoneGap. PhoneGap was purchased by Adobe not too long ago, so whatever the effect of that purchase is going to be kind of remains to be seen, but thus far the project seems to be running just fine, and it certainly is a very viable and very, very smart option for developing. And what's really cool about PhoneGap too is you can use jQuery Mobile. So if you're not familiar with jQuery Mobile, jQuery Mobile gives you the ability to develop mobile applications really as a platform. So you're able to actually develop jQuery Mobile apps using the things you've kind of learned as a jQuery developer. They translate very well to jQuery Mobile. So, and what's cool about using jQuery Mobile and PhoneGap in tandem is you can use that same JavaScript that you're familiar with using jQuery and then talk to the PhoneGap library. So it really, really does kind of speeds up that transition process to be able to develop an actual hybrid application for someone who may have never actually developed a mobile app in the first place. Now you can obviously use jQuery Mobile by itself, i.e., you don't need necessarily create a PhoneGap app. And so if you have someone who is, a functional developer who really understands web development and understands jQuery, they're going to be able to create a mobile application using jQuery Mobile relatively easily. There is a learning curve, like there is with anything. It's not a terrible learning curve, but it certainly exists there. SensaTouch, WebKit, iWebKit, IUI, those are really more frameworks along the lines of developing applications like like jQuery Mobile, providing the ability to actually get things done for mobile web applications. And in certain instances, do allow you to actually develop native applications as well. And finally, responsive web design. Now, responsive web design is an interesting and kind of emerging field. The idea being that you use media queries to understand a user's capability, browser's capability. So you can kind of ask the browser, hey, browser, what do you actually have the ability to do? Are you able to bring up, what resolution are you running at? What do you have geolocation? What do you have? And so you use media queries and responsive web design to kind of do a progressive enhancement, which if you're not familiar with progressive enhancement, it's the idea of a web experience gets better the more capable a user's machine is, meaning that you provide the barest level of functionality first, and then the more capabilities they have, the more features you add. So your web page theoretically should work without JavaScript enabled, and if they have JavaScript, wow, there's, you know, it adds some features. Oh yeah, they have CSS, we add some features. Oh, they have the ability to give me the geolocation, we add that feature. And so it's this idea that you kind of pile on to your application. The more that you're able, the more capable a person's machine is, the better that you actually, the better experience they have. And so that's really progressive enhancement. But as far as responsive web design, you really want to understand the form factor and then respond accordingly. So if, you know, that same website will respond with the appropriate resource, or load the appropriate resource to based on the current aspect orientation of the device, as well as understanding, you know, hey, the screen resolution, I'm going to provide a different set of graphics that are going to make my you know, for high resolution devices like the newer iPhones and newer iPads, I'm going to provide a different set of graphics for those devices. So it's a really important thing to kind of understand. If once you understand responsive web design, you can actually save yourself a lot of time and money, and not develop multiple applications for the various devices, but, you know, really use a single application stable, just rendering different views depending on the way that you're doing things. And since this is an ASP conference, it is a good idea to note the latest version of ASP.NET, and there was a presentation, I believe, on this either earlier or later today. I should have got the exact time, and I apologize for this, on the new features available for actually doing essentially not quite responsive web design, but still reacting with ASP.NET MVC to what a particular user is using. So if you're using MVC, they're basically using media queries. They're gonna sniff the user agent string, and then return an appropriate view depending on what a user is actually using. And it's really a very simple thing to build into your application. And even I know that a lot of times in conference presentations like this, the content will be oversimplified, but having used that feature of MVC4, it's one of those things that actually does live up to the glossies, it lives up to the hype. So really, that's kind of the end of what I wanted to talk about today. I wanted to kind of give you guys as an overview. I wanted to keep it from being a highly technical conversation, but more of a general conversation of things that you should be looking at. And at this point, I do want to go ahead and leave it up for questions.
Already have one question in the Q&A manager, and for anybody else, go ahead and put your questions in the Q&A manager now. Additionally, make sure that you fill out the evaluation for Andrew's talk. I'm sure he would appreciate the feedback. And now you have two.
Cool.
So I'll hand it back to you, Andrew.
Absolutely. Thank you. Absolutely. Do provide feedback. It's how we get better as speakers. So please do that. I genuinely appreciate talking points or understanding what I could do to improve my talking points. The first question here is from L, and it's how to deploy the hybrid apps to the mobile devices. Can we add them to the App Store? And that's absolutely true. As far as hybrid applications, you really are building an application that has to be deployed through some form of App Store. It's no longer something that users can just get access to. They certainly are rendering web pages, and it's easier to get hybrid applications through the App Store because they don't have to look quite as much when they're going through an approval process. And again, if you have a corporate App Store you know, available to you, that's where hybrid applications have to go. My Twitter handle, I'm sorry, I skipped a question there. My Twitter handle is at @ahsteele, so AHSTEELE, and my blog is steelbit.com, so steelebit.com, and again, AHsteele is my Twitter handle. And no, unfortunately, I have not actually looked at Kendo UI Mobile. What can we say something about? Do you have anything to say about Kendo UI Mobile, Matsumer? If you want to put it in the question, I can reply on that. But
yeah, there was a talk on Kendo UI yesterday.
Oh, okay.
That I attended. Additionally, they have a bunch of recordings up on their YouTube page.
Is it a pretty cool platform? For some reason, it's completely escaped me.
Yeah, that's a Telerik product, and their goal is to make a mobile platform that's look native, write code once. So you write the code once and look native. It's a JavaScript framework.
JavaScript. Okay, so it's analogous, at least in aspect of PhoneGap, it sounds like.
Yeah, you still have to wrap with PhoneGap if you want to put it in the marketplace.
Okay. Okay, that's interesting. I'll have to check that out. But thank you for bringing that up. Yeah, I just haven't used it, Matt. I will definitely, as I said, bring it up. I appreciate you doing that. So the next question is from Nitin, and is when evaluating the need for a mobile app, how do we go about identifying the stakeholders? So that's obviously an interesting that can be a hard problem, especially at an enterprise level. And that's why I like the persona use. And when I talk about personas, the reason I like that so much is because what you do is you look at demographic data, and you say, okay, who actually is going to use this application? You know, how old are they? What kind of car do they drive? I mean, you really can take it that far, and you can do that by understanding who your users are. Sometimes it makes people a little uncomfortable when you come back and say the average person at this corporation is a 43-year-old white male who drives a SUV, or the average administrative person at this corporation is of this, you know, is female and is 28 years old. Those kinds of things can make people feel a little uncomfortable at times because it says a lot about the corporation, but it certainly allows you to understand and identify who's actually going to be using the application. As far as the stakeholders are concerned, if you've done a good job in defining your personas, you can come back and say that, yeah, you know, you guys, we'll go back to the expense report application. Yes, the treasury group or the procurement group is responsible for maintaining your expenses, but are they really the stakeholder beyond the data that we need the data? We need the data to be entered in. Do they really care as long as they get the data? And so that goes back to the persona. If the persona's happy, if you've satisfied the persona's goals, usually you're going to satisfy the quote-unquote stakeholders as well. And I understand the problem because it is difficult to know who actually owns something, especially at a corporate level for certain systems. And that usually you have to almost elevate things to the C-level and let the CIO or their minions kind of make those decisions about how things are going to happen. Next question is from Jim K. And if my answers don't satisfy your questions, feel free to update them. I'm more than happy to talk about it some more. Jim K. Can I access the hardware features like getting an image via camera on a phone from an MVC app using PhoneGap? Absolutely. And that's one of the cool things about using something like PhoneGap. And I need to look at this, what Kendo does as well. But yes, what you do on a PhoneGap application is you say, okay, I want to use the camera resource, and there's a JavaScript library for doing that, and there's a way that you set up those JavaScript objects. And when you go and compile your PhoneGap application for Android or compile it for iOS, the application that you get back will have access to those features. So when you have wired up your camera button, when the camera button event fires, it will fire the native camera on the actual device. So that's something that you usually, as I said, you will not have access to in a web application, but using a hybrid application, you can get access to that information, take the picture, and then have the picture uploaded to your ASP.NET MVC website. The next question is from Gold Arrow, and the question is there tools other than PhoneGap for packaging apps for app stores that you have tried and or recommend? Honestly, I've tried PhoneGap, and I've used PhoneGap, and I've used jQuery Mobile. I've used IUI and some of the other ones, but no, I have not used anything other than PhoneGap for actually creating a hybrid application from out of the gate. So really, when I've created hybrid applications in the past, what I've actually done is built the applications from scratch. Myself, the native portion of the application, so I've developed an Android app or developed a Windows Mobile app. And I developed those directly and then had them use the web resources that I need them to. So I've only actually used PhoneGap on actually only one project, so I'm not an expert on PhoneGap yet. But on that one project, I was impressed with what they did. I will say it's interesting, unfortunately, that PhoneGap's starting to be integrated into things like Dreamweaver and some other stuff. So I'm just wondering where the project's going to go. So I'm certainly interested in looking at other solutions, because you know, anytime you get a big corporation involved with what was a small project, it certainly can change things. So other questions. See here, there's another question here. Nitin, yes, all of the ASPConf presentations are being recorded. They're being recorded by myself here locally, and I'll be uploading it, as well as being recorded by the moderator in the room. So there should be a recording available of this conference to listen to and or present later. Okay, and then another question from L is, do you suggest to use jQuery Mobile in mobile website or only on hybrid apps? I absolutely recommend using jQuery Mobile in both instances. jQuery Mobile will really speed your mobile application development. It has its quirks, like any framework. For instance, if you're building a app that really has to pull real-time data all the time, by default, jQuery Mobile out of the gate will cache everything locally in the browser, and it builds a very interesting DOM. If you're not careful with it. So you have to kind of understand what it's doing. But jQuery Mobile is an excellent, excellent tool. And it's gotten a lot better at that. The last time I had built an application with jQuery Mobile, initially when I first put my first application with jQuery Mobile, was something for disaster responders. And it had some real issues at the time with caching, but they've actually worked a lot of that out. So I really do recommend jQuery Mobile if you're developing sites. And in fact, if you're using the new ASP.NET MVC4 stuff, jQuery Mobile is what comes with a NuGet pack. It's all packaged up. It's every presentation you see is gonna kind of utilize that, given Microsoft's emphasis on jQuery. They're kind of the partnership there. So big example, what are some other big examples of hybrid apps which are running successfully? So as I said, Facebook is an obvious one. Twitter has chosen to go the other way. They're building native applications across the board. I'm trying to think of, you'd be surprised at how many applications have hybrid things in them. I'm actually looking at my phone right now to hopefully jog my memory, because Facebook is always the example I use, since it is so, it's such an obvious one. Southwest actually uses hybrid applications for a lot of their stuff. A lot of the stuff from southwest.com, as an example, is actually a hybrid application. I'm feeling silly right now for not being able to name additional ones for you, but if you look at an application, a good way to tell is the way that when you're scrolling through, If it feels chromed, if it feels like there's a frame around a site, around an application, it's a pretty good tell that it's a hybrid application. It's not always the case, but usually if it's framed in some way, generally speaking, there's an idea that you're using a hybrid application. It's not always there, but it is a good poker tell of what's going on. So I think that I've answered everybody's question at this point that are currently in the queue. Again, my Twitter handle is ahsteele, ahsteele. Feel free to follow me. I do quite a bit of tweeting about not only ASP.NET development stuff, but certainly C# and other things. And as indicated earlier by Sean, I am very, very active on Stack Overflow. I spend a lot of time asking and answering questions on that site. And I think that's about all I have, unless there's anything else.
I think one more question popped in, or two more questions.
Oh, wow, okay.
Dylan and Jim K.
Okay. So Jim K., I primarily use .NET, C#, MVC. What is the main stumbling block to start with hybrid apps? Do I need a Mac to develop for targeting for an iPhone? No, you don't need a Mac for developing for an iPhone. It's easier, but it's not required to do that. It's just it's one of those things where it just makes life simpler. And in fact, a lot of what you're seeing a lot of mobile application developers do is actually purchase Macs and develop on a Mac and then run a Windows session. So I've noticed a lot of even ASP.NET developers, even ASP.NET MVC developers, kind of start going that route. They're doing a lot of mobile application development because it kind of gives them a Unix platform, a Linux platform, a Windows platform, and they can do everything they need to do from the one device. It makes me a little leery because, you know, I've got age-old prejudice against that sort of environment, but it certainly works for a lot of people, and it's I'm certainly Apple curious myself at this point for that, but no, it is not required. And the stumbling blocks with hybrid apps. The biggest stumbling block you're going to run into with a hybrid application, as I said, is slowness, because you're really running a website inside of there. And as an example, on iOS, you're getting a second-rate version of WebKit. You're not getting the full WebKit browser. It's not quite as powerful as an application. This exact same application that was actually running inside of an actual web browser. They kind of scale it back a little bit. It's not quite as fast. So there's some speed issues that are going to occur. As far as the application itself is concerned, you have the caching issues that I mentioned with Facebook. You'll find that is endemic in hybrid applications and primarily on iOS devices. I haven't seen it be as bad with Android devices, but it certainly is there. And so, really, there's not a hard stumbling block, especially if you're comfortable with developing web applications, as you kind of indicate here. You know, C# and MVC. You should be familiar with JavaScript at that point, I would imagine, and CSS. So, really, especially if you use something like PhoneGap, you're gonna be way ahead of the game. Now, if you're not using something like PhoneGap, you're obviously gonna have to learn some things. So, if you're wanting to do Objective-C development, you're going to have to learn Objective-C, which, yeah, it's a C-type language, obviously, but it has its own quirks, its own problems. Same with Java. As a C-sharp developer, the two languages diverged quite a bit since .NET 3, so like generics in Java will frustrate you as a C-sharp developer. So if you're developing an Android application, generics are just not the same, and they don't feel good in Java. But at the same time, you're going to find out, you know, how enums are 1,000 times better. So it's really a matter of having to, when you're switching between these things, understanding what are the actual differences. But I think someone coming from an ASP.NET, MVC, C# background should not have really that much of a problem, that much of a learning curve getting sped up, especially if you use something that actually helps you build your mobile application. Okay, hi, late to the party. So this is from Paul. If you could quickly summarize the most recommended tool to get started with hybrid app, is it jQuery Mobile, MVC4, Lynx? Thanks, Andrew. I appreciate it, Paul. As far as getting started, the easiest way to do it, I mean, literally just pop PhoneGap into Google. You're going to find it right away. And jQuery Mobile. Though, really, the hybrid applications, as far as developing for all platforms at once, really, you want to look at something, and this Kendo UI mobile is very interesting to me. I'm going to spend some time looking at that this afternoon. It really is important to understand that you don't really want to have to write the application over and over and over and over again. And so to get away from doing that, if you're developing a hybrid application, you want to look for one of these libraries, one of these JavaScript libraries that are going to help you write it once and compile across the board. Otherwise, as I said, you will be spending some time learning how to do those things. So the best tool to get started is kind of hard to say because, in my mind, you're going to be most productive using that kind of library that lets you get going. And especially if you're familiar with jQuery, using jQuery Mobile, if you're building a web application, it's really just learning it's really a lot analogous to learning a new jQuery plugin. It would be a really good example of what it feels like when you're creating that. So, Paul, does that answer your question, or am I... am I missing something there? I'll let you update while I answer Dylan's question. How does PhoneGap handle Android version issues? Okay, so they actually target the various platforms. Now, you actually, as a developer, when you're targeting or compiling your application using PhoneGap, are going to specify which Android platform you want to use. And quite frankly, at this point, 2.2 is where you're at. I realize that there's other newer features out. But if you target 2.2, you're going to get the broadest range of users. You're also going to have the least number of quote-unquote compatibility problems or fragmentation problems. And honestly, the fragmentation issue with Android is a little bit overstated. It's a fun thing to bitch about, and it certainly does exist, but it is an overstated issue, and it keeps getting better. And especially in an enterprise sense, you're not going to have as much of an issue because you should know which Android devices are allowed in your area. But PhoneGap handles it by you kind of targeting a particular platform. And that platform, you know, if the device can run something, it's guaranteeing itself. So it's really not much of an issue. Raina, you're asking about, is there any freeware jQuery mobile UI designer? As far as the UI designer, as far as developing an app, you can use something called Pencil. Pencil's a really cool platform, especially for Android, and you can use it to do for other phones as well. You can create the ability to understand, okay, this is what my application should look like. I can do some mock-ups. I can make things look the way they want to. It doesn't necessarily translate into actual code once you're done. You're just really kind of mocking things up and understanding how your application would work, but you're able to actually look at it, what it would look like on a screen. So there's some real good templates for Pencil that are available for mobile platforms. The other thing is the Opera mobile designer, or the Opera mobile browser. Opera has a really cool ability to not only simulate user agent strings for your particular website, but also render things at an appropriate resolution so you could understand exactly how your application would look, a web application would look on various devices. So you can pick, oh, I want it to be a Nokia whatever, or a Samsung Galaxy S, etc. You can really kind of get an idea using the Opera tool.
Hey, Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
Can you hear me? This is Paul.
Hi, Paul.
Hi. So I'm late to the party, and I'm really not up with this, so sorry if this is so redundant, but is PhoneGap a tool that utilizes jQuery Mobile and MVC? Because I'm definitely good with C#, right, and MVC 3. So the recommended path is to use PhoneGap with MVC 4 and jQuery Mobile.
Yes.
Okay.
If you did that, you would be able to create a hybrid application that would work cross-platform from the get-go. And the learning curve would be jQuery Mobile. There's going to be a little bit of a learning curve there because it is a bit different than using, you know, just jQuery out of the box. And then there's the learning curve on PhoneGap. But the learning curve on PhoneGap is not. It really, again, I think the best analogy is if you're familiar with. I just pulled up and opened a jQuery plugin that I've never used before, and it's got whatever quirks, and I'm dealing with those. It's very analogous to that, and it's not that much more difficult. You know, and really, I would consider that an average developer should hopefully be functional and at least, you know, somewhat productive within a week, at the absolute worst. But they would honestly just know how to do something, if you know what I mean. Versus having to go look it up, they would just kind of, oh, I need to access the camera. This is how I access the camera. So it really is that simple.
And just one last question. So if I already have an existing app that was written in MVC 3 and but not, you know, not structured, so to speak, for mobile.
Yes.
Have you addressed that? You know, what's the
easiest path forward is to upgrade that application to MVC 4. Honestly, and the reason I say that is you can then switch out your views and create .mobile views. And MVC 4 will allow you to use user agent sniffing strings, and what it'll do is it'll sniff it and say, oh, this is a mobile device, and it will deliver views directly for that. So you can use the exact same controller actions that you're already using, but just deliver appropriate views for the mobile platform. That is the easiest thing you can do. If you are, for some reason, are constrained and can't upgrade to MVC 4, you can simulate that same functionality very easily with some attributes, just, you know, attribute and controller decorators. You could very easily simulate that same user agent string sniffing. It's nothing revolutionary that they're doing. They just basically have added a convention versus having you have to configure that sort of behavior.
All right, and I guess the last thing is there any security differences? Like if you're using regular forms authentication and stuff like that, this works.
Yeah, from a web browser perspective, no, there's not. Yeah. I mean, there's still authentication issues, and those authentication issues can be more difficult from a mobile device, especially depending on the number of times a user would have to enter their password. But no, there is no... it's going to use the same authentication mechanisms as far as the mobile device is concerned. It sees it as the same. And you can with a hybrid application, you can actually do things like, if you have to require multiple passwords, depending on your security policies, it is possible to cache passwords, on a hybrid application and then use those, to bounce off web servers.
All right. Hey, Andrew, thanks a lot.
Not a problem. Not a problem at all. And it looks like, Elle, we have a question from you here, which is, jQuery Mobile JS is a bit large, and the iPhone, for example, never cache files more than 15K. So do you have a way to split jQuery Mobile and CSS to many files or build JS based on our needs? Absolutely. There are options for doing that. jQuery Mobile, I believe they're in the process of making that a little bit more robust, where you can actually only pull out the features that you need. I don't believe that right now that exists, where you can say, okay, I'm like, kind of like, I don't know if you're familiar with jQuery UI, but with jQuery UI, you can compile it in such a way that you, if you're not using particular UI features, you don't necessarily have to compile those features into your jQuery UI package. jQuery Mobile, I believe, is going to have that eventually, but it doesn't as of yet. So the caching of an app, one thing you can do with HTML5, there are ways that you can actually cache things locally, and sometimes, depending on the amount you're going to cache, it will ask users for things. It'll specify to a user, hey, I'm going to use this amount of space. But it's really not that bad. The iPhone really doesn't experience, it doesn't feel like a bad experience using jQuery Mobile, even with the 15K limit.
All